Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Reporters.
Angry reactions continue to pour in against the recent normalization of ties between Morocco and Israel. This time, Palestinian Legislative Council in the Gaza Strip held a press conference to condemn the deal that came at the expense of the Palestinian cause.
Normalization is not a normal. It's a misleading term. It is a misleading term. It is a false term. There is no normalization with the occupation in the history. Every country suffered from occupation, tried by all means to defend themselves, even by armed struggle, in order to liberate their land. For this reason, we are refusing normalization of any country, especially country like Morocco.
Morocco is the fourth state to make such an agreement with Israeli regime since August, despite the Moroccan people's refusal of the deal that has also been struck recently with the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain and Sudan. The Moroccan king claimed he agreed to start the relations with Israel to expand economic and cultural cooperation and advance regional stability and peace.
These deals can never bring peace for Israel. The current crisis will never come to an end until the last Zionist leaves our land. The normalization deals only embolden Israel to commit more crimes.
Palestinians call on the Arab nations to dismiss these normalization deals and protest against their leaders' decisions that Palestinians consider a stab in the back of the Palestinian cause.
The Israeli regime should be put on trial for its crimes and violations of Palestinian rights in the International Criminal Court. The Arab nations should voice their anger at the normalization deals.
U.S. used Morocco's Western Sahara claim as a bargaining chip in talks with Morocco to secure the deal and agreed to recognize Rabat sovereignty over the territory.
While the fourth Arab country has started normalizing ties with the Israeli regime, Palestinians here stress that no deal can bring peace to the occupied territories. They say that resistance is the only way to defend the Palestinian rights. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
The recitation of a poem by Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan during a military parade in Azerbaijan Republic was strongly condemned by the Iranian lawmakers and the government officials. Right after his statements, which Iran believes may fan separatism among Azeri minority, Tehran summoned the Turkish envoy. Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif in a tweet rejected the remarks, saying that no one can talk about Iran's quote, beloved Azerbaijan. Although the Turkish foreign minister has given assurances in a phone call with Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif that Ankara respects the Islamic Republic's sovereignty and territorial integrity, the members of the parliament vehemently slammed such remarks.
In whatever way, direct or indirect, in form of a poem or any other form, such interventionist remarks are vehemently rejected by Iran. We call on the friendly state of Turkey to be watchful about their official statements, which may result in controversy. We respect the territorial integrity of the Azerbaijan Republic and Turkey and expect them to do the same.
The poem recited by Erdogan is ethnically sensitive. A president must know the repercussions of his rhetoric. This was a wrong move by the Turkish president.
Such assertions have always been strongly rejected by the Iranian officials and nation. No one is allowed to talk about Iran's territorial integrity.
Erdogan's statements come as his efforts to join the EU have been futile, and the Europeans impose more and more sanctions on Ankara under different pretexts.
Earlier, the Iranian lawmakers issued a statement condemning the remarks by the Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, saying that such remarks may put the security of the region at risk. Human Abedi, Tehran.
The presidency of Donald Trump has been full of controversy in many cases due to the lawsuits and investigations of a judicial nature that he faces. However, the president has so far managed to avoid them thanks to his position and to the defense provided in some cases by the Department of Justice. This shield has an expiration date, January 20, 2021, when a new president will be inaugurated. From then on, Trump will have to face, as any other citizen, the cases that have been accumulating during these years in the courts.
I think, though, that not only has there have been concerns about what Donald Trump has done before his presidency, I wouldn't be surprised if what he will do after his presidency as well. And so the types of potential criminal allegations that have been brought against him as well as his associates they have quite compelling evidence. And I think that it will be hard prosecutors will be hard pressed to ignore that evidence.
The best case scenario for Trump is there are no lawsuits or they're just frivolous and dismissed by the courts. The worst case is that they're going to have something really serious against him where he could possibly even face prison time. This is hypothetical right now. We don't have a real case of that, but there are people digging into it.
Civil cases weigh him and investigations that could have criminal implications. At the center of the investigations are his taxes, the management of his business, the use of the presidency to benefit his interests, and the defamation complaints of women who accuse him of sexual abuse, which he has denied.
It is very possible that Donald Trump will try to pardon himself. We will be in completely new territory because, again, no president has tried this before. So the courts have never decided if it's legal or not.
Some U.S. media outlets are reporting about Mr. Trump has been asking aid since 2017 if he can self-pardon preemptively, especially on tax fraud accusations. So far, his attorneys have used the immunity argument granted by the presidency. But when he leaves the White House, they will have to reconsider his defense strategy. Reporting from Miami, Ronnie Carvello.
After the controversial law on global security and the massive protest against it, the French government has approved another controversial bill, this time called Law on Separatism, provoking again a popular protest. Prime Minister Castex openly said that this bill targets what he called radical Islam, enemy of the Republic. President Emmanuel Macron has promoted the bill to target separatists undermining the nation.
I have the impression that Islamophobia is an important electoral trading issue. I don't think that Marine Le Pen will win the elections, but to prevent that, the actual government is playing on the ground of the far right.
A rarely seen police cordon surrounded the demonstration entirely from the beginning till the end. Every 100 meters, the police charged the demonstration and made arrests. Some were wounded. Macron had said that the presumed radical black bloc has to be destroyed. Therefore, the police had clear orders, zero tolerance. However, this time, the violence did not come from the demonstrators. Human rights groups have raised concerns over the law, saying it would discriminate and stigmatize French Muslims.
There's so much ambiguity in the formulation of the bill that anyone can be accused of anything anytime. The head of police can dissolve any association on any grounds. With this law, justice does not exist anymore. The democratic state does not exist anymore. Anyone who is a bit annoyed by Muslims can use this law in an arbitrary way. It has to be abolished, same as the law on global security.
The bill in question requires that everyone strictly respects the French Republican principles of secularism, whatever that might mean. The funding of Muslim associations and mosques will be closely monitored. the main association in defense of Muslims, the CCIF, was dissolved. All organizations will have to sign a declaration on secularism if they want to receive funds from the state. In case of non-compliance, they would have to refund the money.
The new bill will be discussed in the French Parliament. Members of the majority party already declared that they want to modify the text. Some want to soften it, others want to make it even more restrictive. Chris Den Hont, Paris.
In a move lauded by Austria's Muslim community, the National Constitutional Court has officially lifted the ban on headscarves at elementary schools. The controversial ban, approved last year by the previous conservative right-wing coalition government, has now been ruled unconstitutional. The court's president says it singles out the religion of Islam unjustifiably, goes against the religious and ideological neutrality of the state, and violates the principle of equality.
The selective ban could have an adverse effect on the inclusion of students and lead to discrimination. It excludes Islamic origin and tradition and carries the risk of making it difficult for Muslim girls to access education and could marginalize them from society.
Austria's Islamic faith community, which had filed a complaint about the ban in January, welcomed the ruling, saying it would end a populist prohibition policy.
We are against constraints and prohibitions because, as it is said in the Holy Quran, there is no compulsion in the matter of faith. Our trust in the rule of law and our patience have paid off.
The ban prevented girls up to the age of 10 from wearing headscarves in school.
I think this is a big step forward because schoolgirls are often discriminated because of their hijab, and with this new rule they should be able to live it out freely and without any discrimination, even if it's by other school students or teachers. So I think it's kind of a part of a revolution.
While the opposition Social Democrats, the Liberals and the Greens all welcomed the decision, members of the Conservative ruling party called it regrettable, and the right-wing Freedom Party even suggested attempts to reinstate it. The ban's proponents argued they were protecting young girls from being pressured into observing the hijab.
But Muslim families deny this allegation, saying using force against girls who choose to wear the headscarf undermines efforts to give them equal opportunities and self-determination. And this time, they've won the argument. Homa Lezgi, Vienna.
Meeting top Afghan officials to finalize the joint comprehensive strategic document between Iran and Afghanistan was the major reason behind the visit of Iranian Deputy Foreign Minister Syed Abbas Araghchi to the Afghan capital Kabul. Analysts say the move will further boost the ties between Iran and Afghanistan.
The visit of Iran's deputy foreign minister to Kabul was fruitful for both sides. Both sides have agreed to finalize a joint comprehensive and strategic document between Iran and Afghanistan. This is a win-win deal, helping Kabul and Tehran boost their ties.
In an exclusive interview with Press TV, the Iranian official stressed the importance of expansion of ties between Kabul and Tehran through numerous ways, including increase of strategic partnership in different fields. He also stressed that bringing peace and political stability to Afghanistan under an Afghan-owned process is one of priorities of Tehran's regional policy.
We would remain backing Iraqi Afghan government and people in their fight for their for peace and stability and prosperity. We do consider peace and security in Afghanistan as our own peace and security, and we do consider the prosperity of Afghan people as the prosperity of Iranians. So we are certainly after a good, constructive, mutually beneficial relations with Afghanistan.
The visit of Iran's deputy foreign minister to Kabul comes as both countries, Iran and Afghanistan, have recently inaugurated the first joint railway project connecting western Afghanistan to eastern Iran as a proof of growing cooperation between both countries. Mutual ties between Kabul and Tehran are expanding as both sides are fighting US-sponsored terrorism and sanctions. But the two countries, observers say, have proved that they will never set back against enemies. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Senior officials have told us, in the eyes of EU leaders, Donald Trump's credibility is now non-existent because of his refusal to concede the US presidential election. At their two-day summit in Brussels, which concluded on Friday, they adopted conclusions designed to reset relations with Washington.
We would like to further develop our partnership with the US in various sectors in the future. We want to stress the importance of multilateral cooperation on the international agenda. This is at the very core of the EU.
Critics say EU leaders lost a great deal of credibility themselves during the past 4 years over their failure to stand up to Trump.
For example, what did they do when Trump tried to start trade wars? Took the US out of the Paris Climate Agreement, withdrew funding for Palestinian refugees and supported Israel's illegal occupation program. And what about his rubbishing of the World Health Organization amid a global pandemic?
Political scientists claim the weakness of EU leaders to challenge Trump makes them complicit. Arguably, the bloc's greatest foreign policy achievement, the Iran nuclear deal, was left to flounder as Trump did everything to try and destroy it at the behest of Israel, critics argue. If Joe Biden can save the accord agreed by world powers in 2015, there would be many plus sides, experts say.
I hope we can switch as soon as possible on the question of security through prosperity on Middle East. And this is, I feel, the dream of all the Middle East people.
The EU continues to express optimism about the Joe Biden administration, which is due to take office next month.
We hope that this is going to be a more positive one. It has been a bumpy road in the last years, and there is a lot of hope on the working between the European Union and the US.
Many analysts warn if EU leaders don't get tougher, populism will continue to flourish in the West, and they might be seeing Trump back in the White House in 4 years' time. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
A typical day in the life of mother of four, Naomi Rantry, founder and CEO of Educare Family Support Service, a fundraiser in West London that uses public donations to help children and families during the pandemic.
We started this food parcel delivery in May. So we did that for about 13 weeks. The numbers were just increasing. We started on 7 on our first week, and it ended up being 200 every week.
First stop, a school. Earlier this year, the British government had to reverse its decision not to offer free school meals in the Christmas holidays, following a campaign by football star Marcus Rashford. Still, more help is needed.
If there's an issue financially, we could support them with maybe some debt management, some financial assistance. In other areas, it might be school uniform they need support with.
People who use food banks are generally double-income, low-wage earners. In struggling families, all it takes is for one parent to lose their job. Karina used to work in the tourism sector in central London.
I used to work part-time on a 0 hours contract, and it was like a normal life for me. Now I'm on a minus because I've stopped working. I had to ask for help. I never knew about food bank. I just found out since I was on a financial difficulty.
Living in a nondescript apartment in West London, Karina, whose husband does food deliveries, not only has to care for her three-year-old daughter, but also her ailing father, who lives alone.
Everything starts to go really bad with him. Sorry, I'm crying. And because I'm the one who's obliged, you know, to help him, to look after him, because he's my only parent.
The Trussell Trust, that runs 1,200 of the UK's 2,000 food banks, say they gave out more than 1 million emergency food packages between April and September. Nearly 500,000 went to children. They also warn these figures are the tip of the iceberg.
Nearly 2 million people have used a food bank in the UK in the past year, almost 300,000 more than the year before. While the government has taken steps, charities say they're not enough, which is why they're relying on donations from the public to try and tackle hunger in the world's sixth largest economy.
In the absence of an income, Many adults living with children in this country have reported skipping meals in the last 8 months. It's the last month of the year, and the nation of nearly 67 million is gearing up for Christmas. Without adequate government support and with food banks under strain, poverty may well rear its ugly head in more British homes. Saeed Pourreza, London.
Give us a decent housing, requisition of empty buildings. That's what the protesters demand from the French government. With the support of human rights associations, these homeless or poorly housed people have made a list of huge empty buildings in the Paris area. They handed over this list to the police headquarters and required that the housing law be applied.
We can apply this law to house everyone, even the precarious homeless French. Thanks to this law, everyone can have a roof above his head. If everybody were housed, that would already resolve half of our problems. It would help us to continue other fights, like work and against discrimination. The requisition law exists. It has to be applied.
I don't have a house. I'm moving from here to there. Once they proposed me a studio with toilets and a bathroom outside, I was disappointed. Now it's been more than 3 years I'm demonstrating with this association, Right to Housing, because they do the right thing.
This building in the center of Paris is entirely empty. This building in the rich 8th district of Paris is also entirely empty. Same for this huge building in the Boulevard Haussmann, another rich area in Paris. The owners are often big insurance or real estate companies, and the value of these buildings increases more by leaving them empty than by renting the space to people. That's called speculation.
We have a law of acquisition of empty buildings, housings, and offices, but it is not applied nowadays. In Paris, the prefecture, therefore the government, can apply this law of acquisition. But we see that the politic of the government is to favor the property rights and the rights to speculate on property rather than right to housing.
300,000 persons are homeless or poorly housed in France. The needs for decent housing are growing. A solution could be simple. In France, 3 million of buildings, houses and apartments are empty. Millions of square meters of offices are left vacant, a record in French history. The requisition law exists since 1945. The last time it was implemented was in 1997. Under the rain and with the cold coming, a growing number of people are in a need for housing, and a decent housing policy is becoming urgent. Chris Den Hond, Paris.
ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام می‌گذاره همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program's To My Brother, and I'm your host, Mehdi. We're talking about the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Please stay with us. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad.
His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time.
Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters in faith. Welcome to this segment of To My Brother, I'm Muhammad. And today, I'm going to read to you an aphorism of Imam Ali from Nahjul Balagha. Before that, let's go ahead and listen to the Arabic words, and after that, I'm going to read you the English translation. Stay with us.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام إن لم تكن حليما فتحلم فإنه قل من تشبه بقوم إلا أوشك أن يكون منهم.
Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam said, "If you cannot forbear, feign to do so, because it is seldom that a man likens himself to a group and does not become as one of them."
and brought most of the world to a standstill, and many were quick to point out the silver lining, the significant drop in carbon dioxide emissions. However, this pollution reduction was short-lived, and past crises indicate that we might be standing at a crossroads when it comes to our climate goals. What has this unprecedented year meant for the efforts to curb climate change and protect the environment? As most economic activities have slowed down this year, especially in spring, a significant drop in greenhouse gas emissions was expected. According to the latest data, after several months of lockdown, severely reduced air traffic and closed construction sites, carbon emissions this year have only gone down 5.5% from 2019 levels. This not only illustrates how the pandemic's impact on climate change was overstated, but it paints an entirely new picture of the scale and effort required to shift the needle in terms of carbon emissions. As the pandemic unfolded, climate disruption continued apace. 2020 is on track to be one of the three warmest years on record, completing a streak of six consecutive years, each one hotter than the other. The year was also marked by extreme weather events, from the devastating bushfires in Australia and floods in Asia and the United States to severe droughts in South America, all consequences of climate change. The coronavirus pandemic has created a surge in plastic waste, adding to the already dire pollution problem. Naturally, this year's main priority has been mitigating the virus spread by implementing collaborative protective measures. However, the latter generated large quantities of waste, from disposable face masks and other personal protective equipment to increased use of acrylic screens, together with other single-use plastic items. For now, the technology for recycling acrylic screens is expensive and may generate harmful byproducts, and the personal protective equipment used in medical facilities is largely non-recyclable. 2020 has therefore meant a setback in the fight against plastic pollution, with negative consequences for wildlife. Challenging times usually spearhead structural changes. And that was the case with the 70s oil crisis, which marked a decrease in oil reliance and a shift towards natural gas, resulting in a drop in carbon emissions. Natural gas emits 50% to 60% less carbon dioxide than coal or oil. However, the 2008 financial crisis has failed to shift the global economy towards a carbon emission decrease. On the contrary, with countries struggling to recover, carbon dioxide emissions increased, especially in emerging economies, reaching an all-time high in 2010. As governments around the world are currently rolling out bailout policies attempting to save jobs, sustainability agendas might be easily and understandably sidetracked. Moreover, leading oil and gas companies around the world are taking advantage of the situation to demand government bailouts and the ease of environmental regulations, setting back the fight against climate change. Many academics and scholars and environmental scientists see this pandemic as an opportunity to redirect our industries. The aviation sector is already taking steps towards a more sustainable future,